Monkeys On Up, episode 48, Nature Finds a Way. Dave and I managed to find a way to continue this podcast. It is our unofficially our 48th episode. I'm just going to start saying unofficially.
It's our 48th episode. Week.
More or less.
I think this is 52 or 3 episode number.
It's more than 48 and less than 148. So Somewhere in between those two. What I can tell you with relative certainty is just about every one of those numbered episodes we've led with a tagline this week. It is Nature Finds a Way. If you can find a way to figure out what movie that tagline is from, spoiler alert, we talked about it a little bit last week. We're going to be talking about it a whole lot more later on in the week. So if you can figure out what that is and you can find a way to send it to us, let me tell you the three ways you could do that. You can email us your guess, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet directly at Dave at moviesonup. Let him know what you think that movie is. Or you can leave it on our Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/moviesonup. If you are correct in your guess, and if we choose you, then you will get a Movies On Up prize package, which will be made up of all sorts of goodies and fun things.
You can also go to the newly designed moviesonup.com.
Yeah, you can. It's pretty sweet now. If you haven't been there in the past week, check it out. It is very much different. We got some new artwork from Jimmy Cole that's really, really sweet. We've got some blog posts up there. There's a blog post
for this week. Listener Tyler wanted us to do an MTV Movie Awards pick'em, and we were going to do it as a separate episode, but then we realized, I don't know how much we have to say about it, and I really wanted to watch Jurassic Park, so we did it as a blog post. So our MTV Movie Awards pick'ems, you can go read those at moviesonup.com. Throw in the comments your pick'ems, and we'll compare them next week.
I mean, nobody's getting anything for being right in this. Actually, I think whoever gets the most right is actually the loser in this particular exercise. I don't really know how seriously I took my picks. I think I just did it so Tyler was happy.
Yeah. It's fan service. All Tyler blog post.
So there you go. Really, if you just...
So at least Tyler better participate in the pick'em.
Oh, wouldn't that be terrible if he didn't? What a jerk. You idiots, I just want to see if you do it. But I guess that's the lesson. If you email us or tweet at us, we will do things for you.
I'm spilling a lot of tea today.
It's a good look for you. A lot of blood was spilled at the box office this weekend with Evil Dead. I did manage to see that. And I was not alone. It looked like it did pretty well.
We completely bypassed over-under last week. I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, I noticed when I was editing that we never ended up doing one.
I was going to probably go about 20 for...
I would have taken the over.
Yeah, and to be fair, I probably would have went 20 with Jurassic Park, too, to be honest.
I forget why I started talking. There's a lot of blood being spilt.
Yeah.
And there was, in that movie, that was one of the takeaways from it that... One of the things that jumped out at me about the originals is just how much blood they used in those movies, and that was one thing that they definitely did do in the new one. There are several nods to the original films, I guess you'd say, in the new one, but overall, tonally, it's completely different. As a standalone horror movie, it'd probably be pretty okay, but it's just it suffers from having the Evil Dead name attached to it.
So you just went in with too high expectations?
I don't think so. I don't think I was expecting to be, you know, completely knocked out of my seat or anything. I mean, I think it was a good horror movie. I'd probably give it, you know, maybe like a 7 or whatever, which is pretty good, but I don't think it holds up to the level of the first two. I mean, it's not bad. It's just, like I said, it just suffers from being called Evil Dead.
Yeah. Well, it worked for them because they... $25.7 million for first place this week. We'll see in Evil Dead 2 because it's on a $17 million budget. So,
and the director already said that they had...
They've already planned
it. Yeah, at South by Southwest, they had already greenlit the sequel. So,
and what's interesting is that Bruce Campbell and him had talked about the original storyline and this storyline merging and how that they would be down with that, which I think would be kind of cool.
I mean, they would have to go so divergent from where they were to have, you know, like an Ash crossover where maybe he does just kind of appear in there. Yeah, that would be funny, and that would be neat, but this movie wasn't funny, really.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It was a completely different
right,
take.
Right, it took Evil Dead very seriously, which is one of the things that I love so much about the original film is they don't. I mean, they're campy. They kind of get the joke. This one, there just wasn't any jokes, which is fine. It just tonally, again, it, I don't know that it would match.
Yeah. Second place, G.I. Joe 2, brought in 20.8. That's about a 48% drop for the second weekend, which for an action movie, that's pretty good drop. Like, to hold over 50%, it's sitting at $86 million after a few weeks. Worldwide, it's already crossed what the first one made. So definitely G.I. Joe 3 will be seeing.
And hopefully it'll be closer. I mean, I think they've found their formula this time. Make G.I. Joe 3 closer to G.I. Joe 2 than the first one. You'll be okay.
The Croods holding strong. It only saw a 22% drop in its third weekend. It brought in another $20 million for $125 so far. Jurassic Park 3D, the wide release of the 3D re-release, $18.6 million for fourth place. That's impressive for a 20-year-old movie re-release where, I mean, really all they did was put it in 3D.
There were a lot of kids now that didn't get to see Jurassic, and maybe haven't even seen it on DVD. You know, they hadn't been exposed to it.
Yeah.
So this was their first chance to see the dinosaurs. But
my favorite part, we'll talk about it later in the week because I don't know if we mentioned it.
I think we did, yeah.
Later in the week we're doing a Jurassic Park episode, but he didn't George Lucas it. Like, he didn't go in and make the effects better because of the technology. They just made it 3D, and I've heard it's some of the best post-converted 3D that we've seen. So.
There were some folks that I knew that had gone to see Jurassic Park, and they weren't necessarily blown away with the 3D. You know, there wasn't a lot of stuff flying at your face. It was mostly depth of field.
Which, it wasn't filmed like stuff coming at your face.
Yeah, exactly. So it would have been kind of hokey to put things in like that. But, I mean, you know, even with Star Wars, to George Lucas, it as you put it, again, that one wasn't filmed a lot with stuff coming at your face, but there was, you know, the depth of field. I'm not big on the post-conversion of movies into 3D, but I do think that one of the things that, you know, the guy said when they left the theater was, it was just nice to be able to see Jurassic Park on the big screen again. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to believe that movie's 20 years old. Olympus Has Fallen rounds out the top five. It brought in another 10, and Tyler Perry's newest one brought in another 10 also. For limiteds, Place Beyond the Pines increased to 30 theaters from 4, 703,000. So, I mean, it's still sitting at 23,000 per screen, which with star power like that, that not getting a wide release doesn't make sense to me, but it's working out. I mean, it's making some money. Trance, the new Danny Boyle, 4 screens, 32,000 average. Robert Redford's new one, The Company You Keep, 5 screens, $26,000 average. So, I mean, the Shane Carruth's Upstream Color, 1 screen, $28,000. I mean, these are big numbers. Like, if you're in the 25-plus thousand per screen, that's pretty good. So,
I think this was a good weekend to have kind of the alternative. You had your family flick with the Croods. You had, you know, Jurassic Park, which is kind of, it is a popcorn movie. You had Evil Dead, which was, I guess, your horror movie. G.I. Joe, your action. So it left room for kind of more story-driven movies. Unfortunately, we didn't have the option to see any of them. But, you know, I guess that's okay because it would have made my decision to see Evil Dead a lot more difficult.
Yeah, and just this is just the time, like starting right before summer and then even kind of till midway through summer is a really good time for limited releases. But yeah, that was pretty much the box office this week. No, I wouldn't say any real surprises.
You know, we both probably would have assumed Evil Dead would have been number one. From listening to you talk, you wouldn't have thought that Jurassic Park would have been maybe as high as it was?
No, I thought it would have been in the 20 range.
Okay.
I'd have went over on 20. I thought it was going to be about 21, 22.
In terms of its place, in fourth, I think it was?
Yeah.
Did you think that was about right, or did you think it was going to be maybe a little bit higher?
21, 22 would have gotten it second, so I guess.
Okay.
But what's G.I. Joe Retaliation, the Croods, and second and third, there's $0.2 million separating those two. So, I mean, they're 20.8 and 20.6 for second and third, so...
Yeah, and I guess if you're talking about $20 million, it's a couple tickets here.
But
it's
I believe that's the second best 3D re-release opening weekend performance.
What was the best?
Nemo or Lion King, maybe. I didn't look that up.
You know what? I'd have let it go, but I feel like somebody's going to ask that question. A listener is going to say, well, gee, Dave, that's a great stat. What's the first one? So that will be your assignment, is to look that up while I fill time.
Star Wars was 22. Titanic was 15.
Those were the top two? before?
Yeah.
Okay. So it is okay. It is second to Star Wars.
Episode one.
It's the only one they've done at this point. And that's kind of what I had figured. Full disclosure, that's why I asked. Because I had a feeling it was Star Wars and I just wanted you to say it.
I forgot Lion King wasn't a 3D re-release.
It wasn't?
I don't believe so.
Yeah. I don't care. Timothy Oliphant, Ben Schwartz, and Abigail Spencer sign on to Sean Levy's This Is Where I Leave You. They will join the, as Dave puts, the awesome cast already, including Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, Corey Stoll, Jane Fonda, Rose Byrne, Catherine Hahn, and Adam Driver. I like that you're coming around on this movie.
I like the cast. I like Oliphant. I love Schwartz, and I think he's a few choice roles away from being big-time star. And then you got Bateman and Faye, Corey Stoll, who is on House of Cards, Rose Byrne, who you put her in anything, I'll love it. Levy maybe picks bad choices, but he, like I said before, I did give him credit, he gets good from his cast.
You know, you're going to be able to get a good performance from this cast, and I think the story is interesting, so I'm all for it. Keep adding people. Should be a good flick. Jane finally got some good news. The revolving door on who will play the villain in Jane Got a Gun has now stopped spinning as Bradley Cooper signs on for the role.
So this was the role that was Edgerton, and then Fassbender backed out, so Edgerton became Fassbender. Jude Law replaced him. The director backed out, so Jude Law left. So Gyllenhaal, Tobey Maguire, and Jeff Daniels were all rumored for it, and then Bradley Cooper gets it.
Yeah, that's actually very well put.
I'm for it. I'm just wondering if the studio kind of wishes. I'm just wondering if they would rather have Edgerton in that villain role still and have Cooper in the Fassbender role. But it's too deep now. So I'm still excited for this movie. Despite the train wreck, I think it'll still be good.
I'm kind of excited about Bradley Cooper playing a villain. I mean, he's been, even in the Place Between the Pines, I haven't seen it, but it looks like Gosling is kind of the, just because he looks like a rough character.
Yeah.
You know, he would be kind of the villain in that movie. So I think it's good for him to not always play, you know, the face,
well,
as your other
hit
co-host
and run.
Might say. Yeah, I guess. Okay, fine. I didn't see that one either.
I didn't either.
And I guess maybe he's the bad
But
guy.
I like it, especially at this point in Cooper's career, because when everything started to come out, when Silver Linings came out, and then we saw Beyond the Pines announced and all these other stuff, it's like these are the roles he needs to be taking. So for him to jump into this, I was just never had a movie be this much of a train wreck, but I mean, it's been 2 weeks now and they've kind of stayed on track. Like they didn't let it, that would kill most movies. Everything that's happened would destroy most movies.
Did we mention the director walking off?
And getting replaced the next day. So,
right.
I mean, so much has happened and they've just kept going, and stuff that would kill most movies, they haven't missed a beat, and they're still going to put out a movie starring Natalie Portman, Academy Award winner, Academy Award nominee, Bradley Cooper. So, I mean, it still has a good chance.
Definitely. Still has a chance to rake in some money at the box office. Should be a pretty sweet flick. Jason Clarke and Omar Sy satisfy their sweet tooth. Stephen Gangan's Candy Store finds its leads in Clarke and Sy, parts that were once rumored to go to Brad Pitt and Denzel Washington. The movie will follow multiple storylines that travel through the criminal underbelly of Brighton Beach, Brooklyn.
They aimed high with these leads. Like when it was first announced that Gagan was doing it, Denzel and Brad Pitt seemed interested.
Those are movie stars.
Jamie Foxx, he was interested in the Denzel Washington part, and it just makes you wonder what happened to where they end up with. I mean, I love Jason Clarke. I think he's gonna be big,
budget.
But he's not Brad Pitt. And Omar Sy isn't Denzel. So, I mean, you're a far way removed. It's a crash-type story with drug dealers and crime. So, I'll reserve judgment now. I don't know enough to know that I'm 100% on board. But I like Jason Clarke, and I like him getting lead roles.
So, that's, I guess, an awesome turn of events for his career. Crimson Peak gets more red and more awesome. Jessica Chastain and Benedict Cumberbatch. One of those is red. The other is awesome, I'm assuming, right?
One's red and both are awesome.
Okay, fair enough. We'll both join the cast of Guillermo del Toro's Haunted House movie, Crimson Peak. They join Emma Stone and Charlie Hunnam. One of those is red. The other, they're both awesome.
They're both awesome. Okay. Like, that's an awesome cast. I really, really love that cast. I love del Toro. I love del Toro doing horror. I am very, very excited for this movie. Like, very excited.
Yeah, and this is the one that, does kind of seem maybe a bit like the 80s throwback horror. That seems to be kind of an in vogue. God, I hate using the word subgenre again. It felt like I used the crap out of it last week. But, you know, for lack of a better term, I'll use it again. It seems like, you know, directors are taking their shot at a very particular style of horror movie. And I think that's awesome because I really liked those. And that was kind of the golden age. So it's good to see that.
Plus Emma Stone in a horror.
I kind of a little bit felt like watching Evil Dead. I was kind of.
Jane Levy's very Emma Stone-y.
Very much so. And I did kind of feel like, okay, this is what it would be like if Emma Stone was in a horror movie. So I guess, you know, we'll have that to see later. From red to blue to green, Zoe Saldana has joined Guardians of the Galaxy as Gamora, a green-skinned assassin.
She joins Batista as...
Dave Batista as Drax the Destroyer.
Dave Batista and Chris Pratt. So it's weird that she's the biggest star of the three. And what's funny is there's two main... there's Groot, who's the tree, and then Rocket Raccoon.
Who's the raccoon?
He's the raccoon. I would be surprised if they get bigger names than all of these for the voices.
You think they're building, essentially?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'll be... I'm very excited for this movie. It's ambitious, but I think hiring somebody like Gunn is an awesome choice. Because that's an ambitious choice, so it's not just, okay, we're going to make this ambitious movie, but we're going to play it safe. They're not doing that, so...
I would see this based on the fact that it was a James Gunn movie. Sight unseen.
Phase, yeah. I don't care what phase, I don't care Marvel, on if right. it were just a one-off. James, I'll see anything James Gunn does.
Yeah, and I think we're not, you know, a huge majority that would flock to see a James Gunn flick. But for me, that's all I needed. You know, the rest of this, I trust him enough to think that this will turn out okay.
And it seems like there's a decent buzz about this movie, even non-comic fans. Even though they're not going big-name stars, they're not, you know, it just feels like Marvel was ready to take that chance and think, you know what, we can put our name on something, put it as part of a phase, and have a hit. So, I mean, you're seeing the same with Ant-Man. Ant-Man's not a huge character, but...
No pun intended,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, I stopped myself to laugh at myself. But so
I'm glad you did because no one else is.
I know, but there's buzz about it, too. So.
It's kind of like a heat check for Marvel, I guess. You throw it up, and if Guardians of the Galaxy is a hit, then you know you've got it rolling.
Which Edgar Wright tweeted yesterday. He said, besides World's End, I directed one other shot for another movie. But he wouldn't...
He wouldn't say that it was Ant-Man.
He wouldn't specifically say that it was for Iron Man 3, but... Yeah,
oh, okay.
What else could that? I guess we'll know after the credits.
Directed one shot.
In about 3 weeks.
Yeah. Can't wait for that. I like Will Arnett. I like him a lot. I like him less now because of his association with the Michael Bay mutant ninja.
Oh, come on. Read the headline.
No, you just did. I'm so tired of this movie. I wish it would go away. It's not going to.
Will Arnett joins the cast of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They didn't say the role. He could be the voice of Splinter. One thing, he could be the voice of one of the turtles. Like, they cast the turtles, but didn't really say whether they're the voices or just the physical part.
Which also pisses me off, because if you're going to go that route, why not cast Ray Park?
Yeah.
Jerks.
Or he's Shredder. The voice of Shredder, something. There's a number of things he could be, but...
There's any number of things he could be doing instead of this.
Yeah,
I like
Will
sucks.
Arnett, but I don't... Screw this movie.
Every time we talk about the Turtles, it leads us...
I get angry.
You get angry. It leads us down a very, very dark path. Nicholas Holt heading to dark places with Charlize Theron, and really, who can blame him? Holt joins Theron in the mystery novel adaptation that forces Theron's character to revisit the massacre that took her family 20 years ago. Giles Paquette Brenner is writing and directing. Chloe Moretz is also in talks to join the cast.
Sure, Theron's been doing a lot of comedies. Like, it seems like the past few stories we've had with her has been comedies. So now there's this dark one that I think it sounds cool. I mean, I like Holt. I like Moretz if she ends up joining. And I love Theron, so.
Yeah, I don't know so much about the writer-director guy.
No.
But Charlize Theron is another one that when she picks projects, they're usually, at the very least, interesting.
There's something intriguing about them. Just her saying yes to a script is enough to get me my interest peaked.
Right.
And Holt, Jack the Giant Slayer was getting a lot of comparisons to John Carter. I don't think Holt is going to have the same problem Kitsch is going to have.
Right.
Kitsch, I think he bombed himself out of movies, not just with that, but he had a string. Holt, I think, is going to be, he's just starting. So.
Sure. And, I mean, Warm Bodies, I think, was pleasantly surprising to folks before Jack came out. So I guess he doesn't have, you know, he's not facing an 0-2 count at this point, so to speak. I can pretty much assume that if I did want to pique your interest, there's a particular actress that I, well, there's a list of actresses, let's just be honest, that we could mention, one of which is Emma Watson. You got three actresses, one ticket to the ball. Director Kenneth Branagh has narrowed it down to three actresses to be his Cinderella after the aforementioned Emma Watson declined the role. Bella Heathcote from In Time and Dark Shadows, Lily James from Downton Abbey, and Margot Robbie of Pan Am, all vying to become Cate Blanchett's famous stepdaughter. Richard Madden of Game of Thrones appears likely to be cast as the prince.
Talk about a turnaround. I mean, they go after Emma Watson, and that's who they offer the role to, and she says no, and then they just turn from her, who they could build a franchise around her name, to just trying to fill it with complete unknowns. Because, I mean, yeah, okay, these guys have credits, but those names aren't bringing people to the theater.
No, but I think the Cinderella would do that. And
no, I agree there, but they went Emma Watson first. So I think they were going for that combination of star power and Cinderella to just Cinderella.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame anyone for trying to cast Emma Watson in anything.
Yeah.
That will, not only is she going to bring people to the theater, but she also is good at what she does. So nothing wrong in that. Speaking of bringing people to the theaters, if we wanted to pique your interest, maybe we mention Emma Watson. If you want to pique my interest, there are two things that you could mention. One of them could be the Cleveland Browns. The other would be Jennifer Garner. And God help you if you manage to find a way to intertwine the two, which is exactly what has just happened. Jennifer Garner is climbing the draft board. One of my favorites, she may not be like a first overall pick, but she would be one that I would trade down in the first round to get, definitely. Joins Kevin Costner in Ivan Reitman's Draft Day. She'll play the secretary to Costner's character, who is the GM of the Cleveland Browns, trying to secure that number one pick.
This movie's so weird. The script isn't particularly comedy-y, but then Ivan Reitman is directing it.
Mm-hmm.
So
she's not particularly comedy-y, though. She's done comedy.
Although
before.
She nailed it in 13 going on 30.
Yeah. I thought she was really good in Butter. Juno was funny, but she wasn't funny in it. She wasn't supposed to be.
And then Costa, just this movie's, there's enough I am interested enough about it, but I need to see more. Like, it's one of those that nothing has me like, oh, I need this movie right now.
A lot like when the Browns actually do draft people in April, I always just end up, no matter what happens, I end up just hoping for the best, which is what I'm doing with this movie. I'm going to see it regardless because it's,
but in short, you're already looking forward to draft day two.
That is kind of the story for Browns fans, always looking forward to the next draft or the next movie about our next fictional draft. Our next real story about a real movie is involving Tammy. Tammy gets her parents, Dan Aykroyd and Allison Janney, to join the cast of Melissa McCarthy's Road Trip directorial debut. Janney will play McCarthy's mother, while Aykroyd is going to be Mark Duplass's character's father. That's a lot of S's.
This is another one where the cast is just awesome. Melissa McCarthy flees with her potty mouth grandma, played by Susan Sarandon, meets Mark Duplass on the road. Then you got Dan Aykroyd involved. I really like what McCarthy's doing, and I love Duplass. So, yeah, this is one I'm excited about. I haven't seen anything from it, but I really want to see this already.
I'm glad Dan Aykroyd's back. That just kind of warms my heart.
I wouldn't say he's back yet.
He's going to be in a movie, and it's going to be a funny movie, so I'm cool with that. I'm excited. And Ghostbusters 3, right? That's coming. Ghostbusters 3, not a remake, but an actual sequel. This remake apparently dreads a good idea. Addison Timlin of Californication has landed the lead role in the meta remake of the 1976 horror movie The Town That Dreaded Sunshine. She'll play a girl who survived a copycat killer's attempt at an annual screening of the event, who tries to solve the mystery of the who the slasher is. Try and follow that. I read it twice and still have no idea what's going on. Alfonso Gomez Rayon will be directing the movie for producer Ryan Murphy. Hopefully those guys will be able to do a good job of letting me know what's up.
It just sounds terrible. This one made me mad when I read this because, okay, so you want to remake The Town That Dreaded Sunshine. Just remake it. But now they're doing this. It's a remake, but it's in reality, and there's this annual showing of the movie in the town that the murders happened, and then somebody tries to kill her at one of these. So it's
at
just,
one of the screenings. I mean, does that
at the annual screening of the movie that they're remaking?
Not to be a jerk, but you know, we're really not even a year from Colorado. Like, do we need? Is it too soon to have a movie where, I mean, they change the ending of Gangster Squad?
I mean, you're talking a 40-year-old movie. It's a slasher. It's not like he's shooting people.
No, I know, but is it in poor taste? I mean,
Nobody's going to see this movie.
God, I hope not.
I just think it's a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. If you want to remake the movie, just remake it. If you want to not remake it and do something stupid like this, don't call it a remake. Just don't do stupid stuff, Ryan Murphy.
Was that LL Cool J? Don't call it a remake. It's The Pit and the Furious, that's for sure. But you are the gifted writer between the two of us. Brad Pitt will go back to World War II for David Ayer's Fury. The movie will follow a 5-man tank crew as they do battle with Germany, the country, in 1945.
Yeah. They're doing battle with Germany out of a tank. Brad Pitt, David Ayer's.
Brad Pitt hates Germans.
He does. He does. This time he won't even touch them with his fists. He has to be in a tank.
I hope there are no German zombies in World War Z. Because they'd be in for a bad time. No Fast, No Furious. Justin Lin, the director of Fast and the Furious 3-6, will not be returning to direct the 7th installment. Collect your breath there. Dave's so distraught, he's just ripped his headphones off. And he actually is the one that wrote this story, so he knew that Justin Lin was not coming back, but he still gets kind of wrapped up in the Fast and the Furious saga, so to speak. The studio will go ahead with their plan to begin filming this summer for a 2014 release. The rumored shortlist for his replacement includes Jeff Wadlow, directed Kick-Ass 2, Brad Furman of Lincoln Lawyer and Roadrunner, Harold Zwart, Karate Kid, Mortal Instruments, City of Bones. Those are two flicks, not just one. Chris Morgan will provide the script.
Justin Lin is backing out for artistic integrity because they want to film it this summer for release next summer. And he doesn't feel like that gives him enough time to make the Fast and the Furious 7.
Wally Pfister, are you listening?
Yeah, but at least somebody wants to keep the artistic integrity intact of the Fast and the Furious movies.
You know, I think Jordana Brewster raised similar concerns.
But I mean, I think it's huge because he did kind of revive, like, yeah, 3 wasn't the best. That didn't do great.
I see where you're going with this, but I'm going to stop you. Justin Lin did not revive that franchise. It was revived, all right, by Dwayne Johnson.
He wasn't in until 6.
And that's when it got revived.
It opened, the one before that opened to $70 million.
Not interested.
It brought in $155
There's a
million.
7 because of Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, I guess he wasn't 5. The titles are stupid. Fast the Furious.
Non sequitur.
Too Fast, Too Furious. Tokyo Drift. Fast and Furious. And then Fast and Furious.
Fast 5, right?
Oh, yeah. Fast 5 is not listed because it doesn't have Furious in the title. Yeah, so he turned him into, I mean, I don't know. I don't care about these movies.
Add a name to the short list of the directors, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
He's supposed to get a spinoff movie.
He should.
Of his character in this.
I've not seen any of them. I don't know what his character was, but I think Dwayne Johnson should be in everything. He is pretty damn entertaining. My, what big eyes you have, Tim. Tim Burton is taking a break from creepy fantasy and Johnny Depp for his next film, Big Eyes, which he will direct Amy Adams and Christoph Waltz in. The script comes from Scott Alexander and Larry Krasinski of Ed Wood. The story centers on Margaret and Walter Keen, the creators of those creepy big-eyed kid paintings from the 1950s or 60s. I'm not an art critic.
And that just makes me think that there's more to it. Like, it's a biographical movie, but those creepy big-eyed kid pictures are so creepy. You know Tim Burton's going to do something with them.
Something creepy.
Yeah. But I like to see him get away and do something different than what he's been doing, because it hasn't been working for me at all. I mean, the last Burton movie I loved was Big Fish, which happens to be my favorite Burton movie by far. And this seems like it's way more Big Fish than anything else.
So. Yeah, which is fine. And Big Fish, not creepy. So
no.
Maybe that's it. Somebody should tell Tim Burton he can make a good movie. It doesn't have to be creepy and doesn't have to have Helena Bonham Carter in it. Although she was in Big Fish, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, so strike that part, but the creepy thing can definitely go. Finding Nemo 2 now has a title. And if I offered you a giant sack of money and you had to guess the title for Finding Nemo 2, what would you come up with?
I believe I said when we talked about the announcing the sequel, I think I said it'd probably be called Finding Dory.
I think you did. And I had just assumed, of course.
Yeah.
Why would they call it anything else? Turns out you were right.
Why wait to announce? Like, that seemed like the obvious story, because who cares about Finding Merlin or Marlin? I don't care what his name was. That's how little I would care about that movie.
But now that it's Finding Dory, yeah, you care more.
I'm into it. I love Ellen. Well, and I love Finding Nemo is one of those that I can watch. There's no limit of times I can watch them.
I think that's probably good because you have two young kids.
They haven't seen it, though.
They haven't seen it yet?
It's playing at work on one of my stores. And I watch it like every day I'm in there. So I don't want to come home and watch it.
Yeah, so you just have to take your kids to work with you if they ever want to see Finding Nemo. If they want to see Finding Dory, they'll just have to swim in the theaters. November 25th, 2015.
Disney, 2015. Possibly Star Wars, Pirates 5, Avengers, Finding Nemo 2.
It's four movies for four quarters, but I don't think they'll spread them out. They should, though. That'd be a heck of a fiscal year. Disney, if you're listening to me, listen to my business acumen. If you have four movies, you should put one.
Well, Avengers will be early May.
Sure.
Pirates will probably be mid-June to July. And then Dory's
November.
But that's
still second quarter.
Yeah.
They've got second quarter,
fourth
quarter.
And then Star Wars would be August or something. I don't see Star Wars being then, though.
It should be May, because that's when they traditionally release.
I don't see it making it by 2015.
I don't care. As long as it makes it before I have to check out, then I think we'll be okay. You hear that, Disney? I just told you how to make some money. Why don't you start thinking like a moneymaker? The sequel to Think Like a Man is officially titled, brace yourselves, Think Like a Man 2. That's T-O-O. Think Like a Man as well. And is set for a May 2014 release.
The book is called Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man. So it would make sense if the sequel was titled
Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man.
Or Act Like a Lady.
Okay.
But, it comes out in May. Kevin Hart is in some quick turnaround movies. That About Last Night remake, quick turnaround. This, quick turnaround. That's what he's... But his movies, they're making for like $15 million, and they're bringing in, they're opening to 2025.
There's a formula. We may not know what it is, but clearly someone does. Movies make money. Somebody likes them. I'm not sure. I didn't check to see Think Like a Man, what Roger Ebert thought of that movie. Probably, along with Siskel, his longtime partner, I would say they're the two preeminent film critics of our time. This past week, Roger Ebert passed away at the age of 70. Definitely, definitely a bummer. I mean, the guy, him and Siskel, I think, kind of brought movie criticism to the masses. And the kind of, we probably wouldn't have a movie podcast, you know, if it weren't really for Siskel and Ebert. I don't know that I've ever really put that together till just now, but you know, not that we're anywhere near as talented as either of those guys.
I mean, they brought movies into the living room. Like, they brought movies is more than just something you go do on a Friday night. Like, they brought them where, and they challenged you to make decisions. They challenged you to not just go see a movie because Harrison Ford's in it. Like, they challenged you to look at what's in that movie and try to, you know, find something to fit you. I hate movie reviews. I don't read them. I'm not a big film critic fan, but Roger Ebert, I never looked at as a film critic. He's a writer. Like, he's one of the best writers, I think, that have ever lived, and he wasn't just up there spouting movie opinions because he had one. It was a true art form for him. And I could read his reviews where I hate movie reviews, but his don't feel like that. And he's always been one of my favorite writers. They just redesigned RogerEbert.com. That's a nice little tribute to him. I don't usually let celebrity deaths like get to me, but that bumped me out knowing that I'm not going to have another Roger Ebert article to read.
The best way that we could really pay tribute to Roger Ebert, I mean, you mentioned how good of a, how awesome of a writer he is and how it didn't seem like your typical movie review. I pulled a quote from his review of a 1998 film directed by a personal podcast favorite of ours, Michael Bay. This is just a snippet from his review of Armageddon. No matter what they're charging you to get in, it's worth more than that to get out. And I think that completely sums it up. Like, that's hilarious. It's apropos. It's not, you know, it's not abstract. You know exactly what he means when you read that. And that's all you need to know about Armageddon and Michael Bay's career.
I mean, just everything he did, like all these film blogs, and you're right, movie podcasts, they exist because of him. Because him and Siskel made people want to sit down and watch two guys talking about movies on a Saturday afternoon.
Yep, that's essentially what we are.
They tricked the world into thinking that other people's opinions on movies matter. And they did it so well that people believed it, and they still do. He was opinionated. But even if you disagreed with what he said, you would never find anybody argue what they believe in better than him. I mean, he was way off base about video games. But you know what? If you listen to his arguments, it's like, wow. Like, that's a compelling... I disagree, but I can see where you're coming from. It's just, he's so gifted, and it was such a weird day because you read in the morning he's taking a leave from his job, and then you read later that leave's going to be a lot longer than they anticipated. So just really bummed out, and a lot of people wouldn't have their love for movies if it weren't for him.
Read some of his reviews, you know, take a look at, you know, maybe a movie you really liked and see what he thought of it. Maybe he'll agree with you, maybe you won't. But, you know, if you come across any that have some funny lines or something that you think's appropriate, you know, I think it'd be fun to tweet it out at us, or, you know, put it on our Facebook page. I think there are worse things we could have on our Facebook page than, you know, quotes from Roger Ebert. So if you want to do that, hit us up at Movies On Up or our Facebook.com/Movies On Up. That'd be a pretty rad thing, you know, if you get around to it. Dave and I about to do our best Siskel and Ebert review of some trailers. We've got quite a few on here. I don't know if we're going to go entirely good cop, bad cop. I'm going to be a big jerk, so I'm going to apologize ahead of time. But
I'd say overall this is a thumbs down batch, but the ones I like, I'm really into.
Fair enough. First one is a movie that we've talked about before. We said it looked pretty good. It's the second trailer for Mortal Instruments, City of Bones. It's a lot of what we saw in the first trailer, just with sort of the mom storyline being a bit more emphasized.
Yeah, and there's not... It's going to get Twilight comparisons just because it is a tween novel. I think the trailer tries its best to distance itself. There's no real romance in the trailer. Like, you see a little bit of it, but it's action. It looks... There's a war going on, and you see a lot of that. It doesn't really show much that the first one didn't. And usually by trailer two, you get a little more into the story. This one really didn't. It just showed more action.
Yeah, it was very, very similar to the first one, just maybe added a little bit. We got a little bit more from This Is the End. There's a Green Band trailer and a Red Band trailer that came out. Again, the trailer's very, very similar. There's just a couple extra beats in some of the scenes that involves potty words and things of that nature. Everyone's name is almost like full name is used when they get mentioned. It's like a comic book. Like, hey, Michael Cera, Rihanna. You know what I mean?
Well, Rihanna's, like, what else?
She has one name. Well, I don't know, but it just seemed like, do people call Michael Cera Michael Cera, or do they just call him Mike?
I don't know. It's just a bunch of funny people playing themselves when the apocalypse hits. I like that it showed more than the first trailer, because the first trailer was like a scene and then a bunch of quick shots.
Apocalyptic things.
Yeah, this showed a little bit more. I think it's going to be a lot more gory than people expect. I think there's going to be some blood, like a lot of blood.
I mean, the Red Band trailer shows
some. Yeah. But I think it
shows
looks,
Michael Cera's story arc.
Yeah.
Just about complete.
I think it looks hilarious. I really think, I mean, I'm excited for this. I love all the people involved.
It does look funny. I don't think it looks as much fun with this Great Gatsby trailer, the second trailer for Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby. There is entirely too much plot going on in this one. The first trailer I didn't think was awful. It was exactly what I expected from a Baz Luhrmann version of Great Gatsby. But this second trailer, way too much stuff going on. I don't think that they necessarily spoiled anything. They just put so many plot points in there that it just confuses you.
It looks like a dream sequence. The entire movie looks like a dream sequence. And it's, what, 50s or 60s? Or 20s?
Yeah.
I forget when Gatsby takes place, but it's not a dream sequence. I don't have any interest in this movie. I hate the book. It just looks like he's trying too hard.
I didn't read the book. I was maybe like 60-40, I would go see the movie after the first trailer. Now, at the very least, it's flipped the other direction. So keep it up, Baz Luhrmann, and I won't have to consider seeing it at all. Our final of our second tries at a trailer for The Conjuring. And I feel like this one is another one that is way, way too plot heavy. And the first trailer I thought was pretty good, the Clap trailer. I am not as excited about the movie now as I was then.
I was excited for a second trailer because we brought up on the first trailer some good creepy stuff.
Right.
But your stars weren't even in it.
Yep.
They're in this.
Now they are.
And you get the story and you get what the... And it's like, oh, that looks like it's from the creators of Insidious and Sinister. It looks like one of those movies where...
I got that impression from the first one.
The first one gave it that feel, but then it left that door open that maybe it's different enough. Maybe it's not just the... Something weird's happening, people are going to come investigate it. That's the setup to all of those, and that's the setup to this one. I'm less excited after this trailer.
Okay, at least we're on the same page with that. I don't know what page we're on with a single shot. I watched the trailer. I've complained about too much plot in some of these trailers. I watched 2 minutes of this, and I don't know what is going on in this movie at all.
This is a typical, you'll see a lot of indie movies do like this. And
some of them.
A lot of them, because it's just like, they're going to bank on, you want to see Rockwell, you want to see William H. Macy, and they're hoping that they get festival buzz. And movies like this try to build off of that. But on the flip side of that.
Don't put a trailer out. Just say, hey, I got a movie. It's called A Single Shot. It's got Sam Rockwell. It's got Billy Macy. That's all I need to hear. Don't show me 2 minutes of abstract video. Because
you know what?
Pisses me off.
The plot summary on IMDb sounds awesome. I wouldn't have gathered that from the trailer.
No, how could you?
I mean, I want to see it because I like Sam Rockwell, and I'm a sucker for movies like this. But I'll see it, but I don't think the trailer has anything to do with it.
So maybe the trailer misrepresents the movie. Is that fair to say?
I don't think that's fair. I don't think it represents it at all.
Really, I was just trying to make a transition into the next trailer, which is I, Steve. It is the Funny or Die, the first Steve Jobs movie. And I think that if it weren't for the banner on the bottom that said this is from Funny or Die, I would have just thought that it was a Kutcher-esque version of a Steve Jobs movie.
I laughed at it knowing it's a comedy because it's not...
You wouldn't know it's a comedy.
No, and I think that's brilliant because you go into it knowing it's a comedy, but you don't know how they're going to find comedy in it. And I'd rather a trailer like this than a trailer giving away any jokes.
All the jokes, yeah.
Because this comes out, I think, next Monday. I think the 14th or whatever day that is.
Be the 15th.
Yeah, so I'm intrigued. And I like that they did this kind of trailer as opposed to giving me any of the jokes.
Sure, that does kind of take some of the fun out of it. Not a lot of fun to be had in Dead Man's Burden. I'm not sure, after watching the trailer, who's kin with whom, but one thing it looks like there is a lot of burden in this movie, a lot of dead men.
Yeah, it's an indie western, which I'm usually not into westerns, but something about this just...
The fact that it's an indie.
Maybe. It just looked good. The cast is really nobody you've heard of. It just, I don't know. Something about it just makes it seem like it's going to be one of those. It looks like it has the feel of an early David Gordon Green movie where it's, yeah, it's going to be a lot of dialogue, but the characters are going to be built up so well. And that, yeah, a lot may not happen, but when it does, you have such a bond with those characters that it's really going to...
It's impactful.
Yeah.
Sure. Our next trailer is for The English Teacher. And after watching the trailer and hearing what the plot's about, there is absolutely no way that I would have been able to guess that Nathan Lane would want to be a part of this. It's about a kid that comes back to his hometown and his high school English teacher helps him get his unproduced Broadway play made into a school play.
And then hooks up with the student.
Yeah.
And then hooks up with the dad. It looks terrible.
The teacher hooks up with the student and then the dad.
Yeah.
The kid doesn't have sex with his own dad that we know of.
Yeah. Yeah. It just looks like it's so weird considering how much good things I'm going to say about this person later in a few trailers from now. Julianne Moore looks terrible. It does not look like the role Julianne Moore was.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that she gets in some kind of a car accident in that movie.
Does she?
Something. Like, she's got, like, some kind of neck brace on or something.
But, I mean, it just doesn't... It's her being, like, silly, almost slapsticky comedic, kind of, which I don't think suits her well. It just looks really bad.
Speaking of really bad, slapsticky, Grown Ups 2. There's a trailer for it. And the first half of it is, hey, you remember this funny thing from Grown Ups 1? It's not in the movie, but just so now that we can all get caught up on the story, Grown Ups 2. Go ahead, Dave.
This trailer is the epitome of what is wrong with trailers, first off, and secondly, cash grab sequels. Because this is 100% a cash grab sequel, and it shows everything wrong with Adam Sandler's choices he's making at this point in his career. There's so much wrong with this. 90 seconds of it almost is just rehashing the first movie. I'm sorry. I don't think there's any plot in Grown Ups 1 that I need to know before going into Grown Ups 2. And it doesn't even show the plot. It shows the chocolate wasted line. Probably the only line anybody knows from that movie because it was in the trailers. And it's probably the funniest part in the movie. So, and then it just looks like, I mean, it's clear. Like, Sandler's not even trying at this point. This was like when Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp made The Tourist. Like, oh yeah, you want to pay us to go on a trip to Italy? Sure. This is just him getting his friends together and just going out in the nice weather and dicking around. But Rob Schneider is too big of a star now. I didn't see him in the trailer.
No, I didn't either. Maybe he backed out for artistic integrity.
Yeah, but it just looks so bad. And there's a Lautner cameo, which that sums it all up, too, is, you know, like, why Taylor Lautner, why is he taking that? I mean, I realize he's going to have slim pickings now that Twilight's over and people have realized they've seen Abduction. But, like, this is just a farce. Like, he's only cast because he's Taylor Lautner. He's not cast to get the star power of Taylor Lautner. He's cast because it's funny that it's Taylor Lautner. And that's it. He's a punchline.
He's a punchline in a movie filled with four guys that are punchlines.
That are just punchlines, yeah. And it's just, I know I'm not reinventing the wheel when I say Grown Ups 2 looks terrible, but Grown Ups 2 really shows everything that's wrong with movies. And I really hope it comes out and opens to $15 million. It won't, but that'd be brilliant if it did.
Second that notion, we talked a bit about Rush when it was first cast with Thor and with Ron Howard. And, you know, some people like Ron Howard a lot. I don't mind him. This movie looks god-awful. I got taken out of it very early on when I guess he's the rival of Thor was asking about, like, who does, you know, who gets in a job where 20... What did it say? Like 20 people die
no,
a year?
No, no, no.
Two die a year?
Two die a year. That's really driven home in like the first half of the
and
trailer.
And I just started writing down. I was like, policemen, soldiers,
yeah.
Firemen, crab fishermen. Like,
because he says two people die a year, and then the same dude later says, I realize every time I get in my car, there's a 20% chance I'd...
I'm doing the math.
So only
on that.
10 people race a car a year. What? It just, and I realize Formula One is a weird.
And that's only if they had one race.
Yeah.
I mean, just doing the math on
or
that.
Or a 10-man league, and every year two of them die. Okay, maybe that's onto something, but it just, Hemsworth's doing his natural voice, which I don't know if you've heard Hemsworth talk. It sounds like he has a bad fake Australian accent, but that's his real voice. There's just so many accents going on in the trailer. It seems like the three leads all have different ones. The lines, it highlights line. This is another thing that's wrong with trailers. It's like, oh, hey, we hired a screenwriter. We paid him a lot of money. So you have cliche, like, inspirational one-liners that highlight the entire trailer, and it just, nothing about this looks good.
I wish I could purge it from my memory. Interestingly enough, our next trailer is for The Purge, which I saw in front of Evil Dead. Jimmy the Mons' girlfriend had said, oh, this looks like The Strangers. I said, yes, it does, but there's another movie that looks even more like The Strangers that looks much better than The Purge. I can't remember what the name of it was, and we just talked about it last week.
You're next.
Yes, that was it. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, The Purge looks terrible. The whole idea of The Purge is that it's in this like futuristic society where one day every year for 12 hours, you could commit any crime. You could do anything illegal you want, and you get scot-free. So for that 12 hours, everybody can get it out of their system, and as a result, crime has gone down. So first off, the setup is stupid.
And why does everybody want to murder somebody?
Yeah.
I can think of a lot of illegal things that I'd like to do.
Yeah.
Given 12 hours. I mean, I'd be parking in handicap spots. I'd be going in the outdoor at Walmart. All sorts of stuff, man. I'd straight up just be breaking laws.
Yeah, this movie looked terrible. Like, so bad.
I think they kind of rebound here at the end.
Yes, it's by design.
Yeah, we finished strong with Nikki Winding Refn's latest, Only God Forgives. And I just, the whole time, I just thought somebody, it looks a lot like Drive. I thought somebody just give Gosling a Xanax or something because he just looks so upset.
And it looks awesome. Like it looks, it just looks like it's got that Nikki Winding Refn brutality and the violence. And you know it's going to be a slow-moving story, but the trailer's not cut together like that. It just, it looks so good. It just Gosling.
He's going to fight a samurai or something.
Yeah, like just, Gosling is one of those that, you have certain director-actor combinations that are just perfect. And Gosling and Nikki Winding Refn seem like one of those. It just like, I would see anything they do together.
I would have watched The Equalizer had they been together, but since they're not, now I'm not. But I'll see this. When I walked into the theater in Evil Dead, the trailer that was playing as I was promenading down the aisle was for Carrie, the aforementioned Julianne Moore. It obviously starring Chloe Moretz as Carrie. It's exactly what you would expect from a trailer for Carrie. I actually think it's a pretty good trailer. It hit all the highlights, but it didn't hit you over the head as much with the plot.
I think it showed way too much of the plot, but I'm very familiar with the plot.
Right, and I think most people probably
are
at this
point. For younger kids, I don't think it gives away too much. It does give away a lot, but
yeah.
But a lot of the stuff that it gives away, you don't know. If you don't know the story, you may not know that that's giving away a key point. I think Moretz is going to be nominated for an Oscar for this. I feel like this movie was supposed to come out in April. They bumped it back to October. I think partially to cash in on Halloween.
Yeah.
I think mostly to get her and Julianne Moore in there for Oscar love. Because I don't think it's out of the question. The first one, they both got nominated, I believe.
Do you have the stones to choose this as a film ball pick?
Right this second? Sure.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Mark it down. April 9th is the day we're recording today. Dave's already picked one of his fantasy film ball selections.
But I think it'll make a lot of money. I wouldn't be shocked if they get nominated. I don't think it's going to get a lot of wins, but I wouldn't be shocked if they're nominated. It shows a little bit more because some of the best stuff in the book, the first movie, it didn't deal with the destruction of the town all that much. This, you see it. Yeah. I mean, you saw that in the teaser. It was the aftermath of what happens to the town. I really, really, really think this is going to be good. I think this is going to be what people look at and think, like, you can remake a movie.
Sure.
And make it worthwhile.
And it can be good. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
I think this is going to be one of those that if we do another list in 10 years of our favorite remakes,
yeah.
I think this is going to be one of those that would show up on a lot of people's lists. I just have a feeling that this movie is going to just knock it out of the park.
I think you're right. And I think from the trailer, I was excited about it. I think they do a good job in that one. Most of these trailers, not so good, but that one is nice to end on an up note. On an up note for next week, the trailer for Hunger Games: Catching Fire will drop at some point.
It's supposed to be 4/14, which is Sunday.
Yeah, sure. So, that's probably tied into something on
MTV. MTV Movie Awards.
Yep. Okay. God, we're brilliant.
Which there's a blog post on moviesonup.com.
And I believe there's actually a mention of Hunger Games somewhere in that blog post. One of us mentioned it. Maybe. I don't know. Whatever. Coming out before April 14th, coming out this very weekend in the theaters, 42, the Jackie Robinson movie, Scary Movie 5, which we really need to talk about, and Disconnect. I hope there's a giant disconnect between audience members and Scary Movie 5.
I don't know if it's because I love the story so much.
Of Scary Movie?
Of 42. Oh. I think 42 looks like it might be really good. I think Harrison Ford as Branch Rickey is solid casting, because I know if he commits to it, I think he'll do good. Chadwick Boseman looks great in the role. I can't say I've seen him in anything, but I think it'll be good. I really do. I think it'll be really good.
So how much money do you think it's going to make? I'm not going to let you weasel out of it this week.
25? Is there enough hype around it? Baseball just kicked off.
I think there is. I'll take the over.
That's good. I'll take the over.
It's America's pastime, right?
Scary Movie 5. 15. That's more wishful thinking.
I know. And I so want to take the under. But I think there's enough 17-year-olds.
There's enough 17-year-olds. Haunted House, the Marlon Wayans one, came out. It didn't do very well, but did well enough to get greenlit for a sequel this week. With Lohan.
So you're going to take the over too, Charlie Sheen.
I think so. Lohan, it's all a punchline, and it's just weak, lazy jokes. And sometimes that's what people want, even though there is quality competition out there right now. I hope. I'm taking the over, but I hope. I would love to see this do
5.
Like 5 or 6.
That'd be great. Movie that didn't make a lot of money at all. It'll be out on DVD this week. Hyde Park on Hudson. That is Dr. Venkman playing the role of FDR. And there's probably there's some British people that come over to visit him or whatever. I'm excited. I didn't get to see it. I haven't seen it yet, obviously. I like Bill Murray. I'll watch just about anything he does. So this one looks dry, but it's Dr. Venkman. I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
You don't sound as enthused on it, and that's fine.
I've heard that he's really, really good.
But the rest of the movie sucks.
Yeah,
fair enough.
He's one of those that he's very picky about what he does.
Sure.
So just him being involved makes me want to see it.
So you being picky and not wanting to see Hyde Park on Hudson, why don't you give the folks something else that they can see, either Netflix,
I'm going to do
Redbox.
I'm going to do two. I don't know if they're Netflix or not. Looking into Single Shot a little bit more, it's directed by a dude named David M. Rosenthal, who back in 2004 directed John Cho and Seth Meyers in a movie called See This Movie. I randomly caught it on Showtime probably right after it came out. It's just two guys get a film accepted into the Montreal World Film Festival without making a movie, so they have to get a movie made by then. It's different, it's unique. I liked it enough. And the really one, as far as baseball movies go, I'm not a baseball fan. But
Major League.
If you're interested in Jackie Robinson, a made-for-HBO movie from I don't even know what year, called Soul of the Game. It features, it's Jackie Robinson, Satchel Paige, and Josh Gibson right before the jump to the Dodgers. So it's following them three in the Negro Leagues when there's kind of a rumor in the air that blacks may be allowed in the majors at some point, and it's Satchel Paige, who's like 40 at the time, who still thinks he's good enough to be a major leaguer. It's Josh Gibson, the best power hitter to ever live, but has mental problems. And then there's Jackie Robinson, who's just this young up-and-comer. It's such a good movie. And I generally, there's usually something weak about HBO original movies that I just doesn't feel right. But this movie, it's so good. If you're into baseball, if you're into the story of Jackie Robinson, find For the Love of the Game. Because, or no, not the...
Soul of the Game.
Soul of the Game.
Gotcha. I was listening.
Yeah. It's from 1996. And it's Delroy Lindo as Satchel Paige, Michael T. Williamson as Josh Gibson, and Blair Underwood just nails it as Jackie Robinson.
I'm only going to give you one, and it is a movie that I selected because Dave, when we talked about it, said, man, this is going to be stupid. And it's not a great movie, but it stars two people that Dave absolutely loves, Charlie Hunnam and the adorable Kate Mara.
But it wasn't good.
It wasn't bad.
It was pretty predictable.
I mean, if you read the plot synopsis of Deadfall, it is sort of predictable. It's the Eric Bana, Olivia Wilde flick where they are brother and sister. They rob a casino, get separated in the woods. Hilarity ensues.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was okay. There's a lot of people in this movie. I mean,
the cast was really good.
The original Carrie, Sissy Spacek, is in it. Chris Christopherson, Treat Williams. There's just a bunch of people in the movie. And I mean, it's not going to engross you, but it was, I think I was messing around with a podcast and I had it streaming on the old Netflix, and I wasn't angry for having spent the hour and a half with that interesting family. And Olivia Wilde's good to look at, and I didn't think she was bad in this movie either. Like,
and
she's
growing on me slowly.
Yeah, she gets
Except
a rap.
She's in Rush.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So that might just wipe it all away.
Not for me, because I won't see Rush, but I did see Deadfall, and maybe you should too. This week, later on in the week, we're going to be talking about Jurassic Park. So you have a few days. If you haven't seen it yet, take a look. See it in 3D. You can catch the Blu-ray, the DVD release. Those are both the Blu-ray release. They're out. Dave and I very soon are going to be recording our thoughts on Jurassic Park. That'll be up, I would say, probably like Thursday night, Friday, somewhere in there.
Yeah. I hadn't watched it in 20 years. I saw it when it came out, and that was pretty much it. So I went in fresh, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Let me give a little mea culpa from the very beginning of the podcast. I said nature finds a way. It's not. It's life. Life finds a way. So if you can figure out what that movie, the tagline for that movie might be from, why I chose to bring it up right now of all times in the podcast, you know what to do. Hit us up. moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet at us @moviesonup, or check out our new website, which is completely redesigned, moviesonup.com, where you'll find, in addition to this brand new episode, you'll find our Jurassic Park episode. You'll also find our blog post for the MTV Movie Awards, whatever they're called. So, you know, take a look at that. Let us know what you think. Do it by Sunday, April 14th.
Yeah. Listen to us on iTunes. Leave us a review. Leave us a 5-star rating. And Stitcher. We are on Stitcher now, if you're a Stitcher user. Next week, very exciting. Next week is our summer preview. We'll have our news episode early in the week, but then later in the week, we'll have our summer preview, and we're going to be playing Box Office Bash this summer. We'll lay out the rules for that, and you'll have a couple weeks to get in your Box Office Bash submissions. But it's going to be fun next week.
Not that this week wasn't fun. We're only half done. Who knows? Maybe the Jurassic Park episode will be awesome. Why wouldn't it be? It's us, right?
Check me out, at Dave Bissell on Twitter. I have another show called Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave, ericanddave.com, at Eric and Dave on Twitter, facebook.com/Eric and Dave. That's all Eric's with a K. So that's it for me.
That's it for me.
So until next week.
Or until, like, later on this week.
Later this week.
Yeah. I think we've said next week the past couple, and that's been wrong. So I'm putting a stop to it right now. So until next episode.
Keep it up.